And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. I'm going to address the subject of the USA again today, in particular the outcome of the recent midterm elections and what the results point to regarding the political direction of that important country. It's not that I'm obsessed by the USA, though regular listeners to this show will recall that over the past 10 years or so, I've focused on it quite a few times. I don't by any stretch of the imagination claim to know that country well, I don't. But I do count many Americans as lifelong friends, and as I did once work for an American multinational company and visited parts of the US a number of times. But its size, its variety, its history, its contradictions, and openness intrigue me. Also, I have three grandchildren who are half American, so that maybe that gives me some special access. To answer my many questions, I've invited back Charles Adams, or to give him his correct title, the Honourable Charles Adams, a former United States Ambassador to Finland from 2015 to 2017. He is today Global Co-Head of ORIC's International Arbitration Practice Group, and if you're not familiar with the name, ORIC is a prominent US international law firm. Charles is acknowledged to be among the most prominent international arbitration experts in the world, and we've been friends for more years than I can count. It must be about 30, Charles. I'm sitting in his office in that delightful part of central Geneva called Le Tronche. As I said, I'm here to talk about the recent midterm elections in the US. My guest was there during the time leading up and slightly after, so is well placed to give me and you, dear listeners, his personal take on what happened and where things might go politically speaking in the 2 years leading up to 2024, the next presidential election. Hello, Charles. Welcome back to the McKay Interview. It's good to see you again.
Well, it's very nice to see you, Mike. We've known each other for 30-odd years and have spent many an evening together.
We have. It's great. And I'm glad I wasn't very good at arithmetic at school because I hadn't realized it was so many years.
It is a frighteningly long time.
Now, Charles, I know you won't take offense at me describing you to our listeners as a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. Moreover, that I inform our listeners that you are also a political and social activist, having served as co-chair of Americans Abroad for Obama, a Democratic Party fundraising and networking organization of Americans living overseas, and that you also served as a member of the National Finance Committee of the 2008 and 2012 Barack Obama presidential campaigns. But, and it is a significant but, you also served your country's ambassador to Finland, a great honor, and having known you a long time, I know that I can rely on your sense of fair play and even-handedness in your answers to my questions, which are of a political nature. So to start our conversation, for the benefit of listeners who may not have paid close attention to the election results a few weeks ago, please tell me in broad terms what happened. I know that some pundits were rather surprised by the results in some places, but tell us what happened.
Well, I can tell you of my own experience of that day and of that election watch night, since it so happened that I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and in fact went to vote in person in my voting address in the U.S., which is in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and then stayed up all night watching the returns. What had been anticipated was advertised as a, quote, red wave, unquote, in favor of the Republican Party.
Red is the color of the Republicans.
Indeed. And the expectation was that the Democrats would lose somewhere between 25 and 40 seats in the House, thereby conferring a large majority on the Republicans, and that the Democrats would lose the Senate as well, where today the Democrats enjoy the slimmest possible majority of 50 seats each and a vice president to break a tie.
In your system, that's how it works, is the speaker has the vice president, not the
vice
speaker.
President,
yeah. Sorry.
Currently
yes.
Kamala
Sorry.
Harris, yeah. Has the deciding vote.
Yeah.
And actually, none of that happened at all. There are a couple of seats which have yet to be finally determined, but the Republicans will have a House majority, not of 25 seats, but of 4 in all likelihood, which is to say that the Democrats will have lost not 25 to 40 seats, but a maximum of 10. The Republicans will have a majority, that is to say, of 4 seats, whereas the Democrats today have a majority of 6. And so this was quite a stunningly positive outcome for the Democrats, unexpectedly so. Insofar as the Senate is concerned, the Democrats currently hold 50 seats, the Republicans 49. There is to be held on December 6 a runoff election in Georgia. Since neither the Democratic candidate, Reverend Warnock, nor the Republican candidate, Herschel Walker, got a majority of the vote in that Senate contest in Georgia.
So when you say a runoff, you mean a rerun? Or is it, does that mean slightly different?
It is different, because a rerun would also include other candidates.
Just between the two.
So it's just between the two.
I see, okay, yeah.
Neither of whom got to 50%.
Right.
Senator Warnock had 49.4% as against 48.6% for Herschel Walker. I will make a confident prediction that Reverend Warnock will win the runoff election in Georgia. The Democrats will have a majority of 51 seats against the Republicans 49. On the morning of December 7. Actually, the new Congress goes into effect only early in the new year, so that it is as of the new Congress that this new 51-49 Democratic majority will take effect.
So before we talk about the political mood of the country, just tell us a little bit more about the vote itself. Was the turnout about what you expected? Was it higher? Was it lower? And I know from just having watched American elections over many, many years that the midterm is usually when the sitting party of the president gets a slap in the face and things go back to gridlock for 2 more years till the general election. Has that happened this time?
Well, you're quite right. That has been the norm and was the expectation.
Yeah.
Particularly since in this midterm election, the Democratic Party was freighted with a president whose personal popularity is low, hovering at around 42%, at a time of inflation, at a time of very high gas prices in particular, and at a time of general uncertainty and fear. All of these elements were thought in advance to be predictive of a general rout of the Democrats and of its candidates. That did not happen.
Was there a high turnout of voters?
There was a very high turnout.
About
yes,
average?
Indeed.
Yeah,
about actually
turnout.
Somewhat above average.
So people took it really seriously?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Very much so,
okay.
As indeed they should have.
So what do the results tell you about the political mood of your country? I mean, we read that it is a badly divided country. Of course, it's not the only Western democracy to be in that state. And look at my own country, the United Kingdom, and across to Italy. There's just two examples of European countries with division and controversy. But what's your assessment of the extent of that division and the implications of the division that people talk about in America?
The division is stark. It can be described as a division between, on the one hand, a tendency toward authoritarianism, and on the other, a deeply rooted desire to maintain and preserve democracy as a mode of governance. That is the divide which currently prevails in America, as it does elsewhere in the world.
It's a very stark choice.
It is indeed. And that is why these midterm elections were extremely important. It is why the forthcoming presidential cycle in 2024 will be absolutely determinative.
Well, before we get on to looking into the future, Charles, we chatted back in the summer about America, and you said something to me which quite startled me at the time, even though what you said contained quite a few ifs and buts. You said, as I recall, that come the next presidential election, if Donald Trump or someone similar, though that's hard to imagine, should run again, and if the Republicans won, there would be the real prospect of the United States of America splitting into three parts, a western coastal part, an eastern coastal part, and what's left in the middle. Secession, Charles? Surely not, but please explain what you had in mind, or what you have in mind, should that happen.
Well, let me first say that I was speaking in reference to a hypothetical as to which I earnestly hope that it does not occur.
Yeah, that's a given. I can understand that.
But the supposition is that were he whose name does not escape my lips were to be elected in 2024, then there would be the possibility of a schism so deep that the Pacific states of America, to wit, the states of Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, New Mexico, and Hawaii, would collectively decide that they no longer wish to be a member of this club.
It's a bit more than a club, surely.
And would secede to form a separate sovereign nation. In like manner, the Atlantic states of America, being the entire eastern seaboard, conceivably as far south as North Carolina, would likewise say this is an entity to which we no longer wish to belong. This would leave the good people of Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin, all on the Great Lakes, with the possibility of volunteering to join Canada.
Leaving. I should tell the listeners that you're smiling as you say this to me. Luckily, this is not television.
Leaving the remainder to fend for themselves, having exercised their democratic right in 2024 to elect the government that they deserve.
But you're the best person to ask this, Charles, because you're a lawyer by profession. I know you're probably not a constitutional lawyer, but I'm sure you've done your homework before this interview. Does your constitution allow that? Because I know, for example, not personal experience, but for example, in East Africa, when Eritrea voted to leave Ethiopia, that its constitution in Ethiopia allowed one republic within the federal unit to vote themselves out. But is that the same in America, that a state could vote to leave the union without the union voting on whether it could or could not leave the union?
The answer is no. The Constitution does not so provide. On the other hand, the United States of America have experienced secession.
And a very bloody war it was.
Followed by a very bloody conflict indeed. The fundamental difference there was that the secession was largely geographical, whereas in this hypothetical, we would be talking about a secession more ideological in nature. Albeit, the fact is that liberalism and adherence to democratic norms is more fundamentally a precept concentrated on the two coasts, the Pacific and Atlantic coasts of America. Hence, the what I hope to be entirely hypothetical notion of there being a secession of an agglomeration of those states, which are, as it happens, principally democratic states in political configuration.
And is this something that people are talking about in the United States, or is it just something that, sort of geeks who might be, I don't mean that disrespectfully, but, people that just are enthralled by constitutional arguments are talking about? I mean, because it sounds very, very serious.
Well, hypothetically. Were it to happen, it would be not only serious, it would be absolutely calamitous.
Absolutely, yeah.
Insofar as the USA is concerned. No, this is not something about which people talked around the Thanksgiving dinner. There have been over the years rumblings about potential secession by people in Texas, for example, unhappy with Washington and principally motivated by right-wing influencers and thought leaders. So the concept of secession has been bruited about from time to time. Is it a serious prospect? No. Is it likely to happen? I certainly hope not. In a horrible hypothesis, it is something which could be imagined.
Well, I guess this story will run for a while anyways, but let's just move on a little bit. You've already actually answered part of this question, and maybe you're reading my script, but recently that notable market research company Gallup wrote, and I quote the words they wrote, "Confidence in the major institutions of the federal government is at a low point at a time when the President and Congress are struggling to address high inflation, record gas prices, increased crime and gun violence, continued illegal immigration, and significant foreign policy challenges from Russia and China. Confidence in the Supreme Court had already dropped even before it overturned Roe v. Wade." And for those not familiar with the detail, that was a landmark Supreme Court decision back in 1973. "The confidence crisis extends beyond political institutions at a time when a near record low 13% of Americans are satisfied with the way things are going in the US, and only 7% said they had a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the Congress." That's a quarter. No, surprisingly, at least to me it was surprising, 25%, a quarter, said that of the Supreme Court didn't have so much confidence in them, down 11% on the last time opinions were measured. What's gone wrong, Charles, and how can it be fixed?
I think what all of these statistics reflect more than anything else is a general sense of instability, of fear and foreboding in the populace at large, as actually around the world. We are living in a particularly challenging and unstable time. In the U.S., from the year 2017 through 2020, through January 2021, was a particularly nightmarish time for many, many Americans during the time of the former administration. It's been followed by economic circumstances which are beyond the will or control of any political enterprise. There is warfare on the European continent at a significant scale for the first time since May of 1945. The world over is a sense of insecurity, and that translates into statistics such as a measurement of distrust in fundamental governmental established entities, the Supreme Court, Congress, the White House, everybody.
Yeah, it's a good assessment, Charles. My guest today is the Honourable Charles Adams, a former US ambassador to Finland and presently global co-head of ORIX International Arbitration Practice Group, and we're in Geneva today. Charles, we cannot have a conversation about American politics without talking about Donald Trump. I know it pains you to mention his name, but his place, whether I'm sure you'd agree, whether you might not like it or not, is guaranteed in history, it's assured in history. And I was reading that he actually started his campaign for the presidency on the 19th of November 2012, very precise, a few days after Barack Obama defeated Mitt Romney. And that's the beginning of a very long campaign. But although he won in 2016, he has failed in three straight nationwide elections since he was president, 18, 2020, and 2022. Charles, has Trump's time passed? Has his sell-by date expired? Or could he win again? Or let me put my question slightly differently, Charles. What would need to happen for him to win the presidency again in 2024, Charles?
Well, he did announce his renewed candidacy a matter of days after the midterm elections. Midterm elections during which his Republican Party took a shellacking, principally on account of his doings and misdoings.
Tell us a bit more about that. I mean, you've used a Barack Obama word, I think. But I mean, are you saying that because he identified with certain candidates or endorsed them, that they did badly?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Quite a number of candidates were hand-picked by the former president in important swing states, of which Pennsylvania is the most prominent example, but Georgia is another, Nevada is yet again a third, and all of those people went down to defeat, some of them to quite devastating defeat, such as the Republican candidate for the governorship in Pennsylvania. And all of these people were identified as candidates, were nominated, in effect, by the former president. And so, yes, fingers are pointing at him for this disappointing outcome for Republicans, even as he, to general indifference and disinterest, announced his candidacy for the Republican nomination for president in 2024.
But people of our generation remember Bill Clinton. Didn't they call him the comeback kid? Can't Trump do that too?
I consider it to be highly improbable.
Because things have changed so much.
I think that the American people, a majority of the American people, and a significant but still minority slice of the Republican Party have such an intense dislike of and distrust of the former president as to make the likelihood of his being elected again to any elective office extremely remote.
Charles, if the Republicans have been divided by Trump, the Democrats seem to be pulling in different directions too. This is a political innocent of American politics like me could not be blamed for thinking that it ought to be easy for your party to coalesce around a winning team and a winning formula, but that hasn't happened, has it? Even though you've done well recently, you get the sense that you're pulling in different directions, or is that just the nature of the party politics in the United States?
It's the nature of the Democratic Party in particular.
And why do you stress that? Why is it?
Because the Democratic Party is a big tent which encompasses a wide range of opinion, ranging from what in Europe would be described as center-left to much more progressive and still more leftish positions.
So progressive means socialist. It's a code word for socialist.
Social democrat.
Yeah, social democrats.
Say,
yeah.
Rather.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Democrats are always arguing among themselves, which is a very healthy thing for a political party to be doing. And the party does come together behind its candidates once these have been nominated, and will again in 2024. Whether or not President Biden chooses to run for re-election.
That's my last question to you now, Charles. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but you've got a pretty good sense of the way the cards are likely to fall. And I know you're a hard-nosed realist, not a misty-eyed idealist. So please tell me how you see the political and the social economic road to the presidential election of 2024 and the legacy or the continuation of President Joe Biden, who's now at the grand age of, what is he, 78, 79, something around that area? I'm not sure exactly what. How do you see that, the future?
I think what one can predict is that by the year 2024, many of the most compelling and urgent sources of discomfort, dismay, and concern of the American people will have abated. Inflation will have been reduced, if not eliminated altogether. Prices will have returned to historical norms. The sense of division, the intensity of the emotions which have divided the American people, particularly since the time of the former administration, will have cooled. And I think that the general mood will be very much more upbeat than it has been to date.
That's a pocketbook theory of politics, in a way, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Americans will just feel better. People
will feel better. The kitchen table issues will largely have been resolved. The situation of the average American will have improved in relation to where they see things at present. I think internationally, too, I hope, sources of conflict will have been reduced and peace will have been restored to the European continent and around the world. And that will be reflected, among other things, in the presidential election in the United States in November of 2024.
And this is not an improper question to end on, but I believe that President Biden is older than Ronald Reagan was at the time. Is he in good health and, you know, good stature physically, or is he likely just to pass the ball off to a younger man or woman?
President Biden has done a magnificent job, in my view, and his administration will be remembered as an administration which restored competence and sanity to government at the presidential level. Will have laid the foundation for legislative progress toward social justice. President Biden is absolutely vigorous and in full possession of his very profound capacities of intellect, and, as I say, has done admirably well. It will be his choice whether or not to run for re-election. There are those in the Democratic Party, and to be candid, I count myself among them, who feel that President Biden will have earned the opportunity to live out the remaining decades of a long and productive life in peace and quiet, that the opportunity will arise for him to pass the torch to a younger generation of leadership of the Democratic Party and of the United States.
Is there a good selection of that generation below him? I don't follow it that closely.
Oh, there is an entire cohort of very capable and attractive candidates who would, in this supposition, emerge as candidates for president in 2024.
Well, let's leave it there, and let's see how the future pans out. Charles, look, thanks again for your time today, for answering all my questions so clearly, as you always do. And I think maybe you've set the ball up for a third interview.
Well,
I look forward to 25, Mike. You know, let's hope that we live to see the day as well. My guest today has been the Honourable Charles Adams, a former United States Ambassador to Finland and presently Global Co-Head of ORIX International Arbitration Practice Group, and we're talking in Geneva. Thank you again, Charles.
Thank you, Mike.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.